Welcome to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. I'm Justine Toe.
And I'm Natasha Moore.
Well-being has become a frequent buzzword in the last couple of years, particularly when it comes to our young people. As parents, teachers, brothers and sisters, family friends, aunts and uncles, etc., we just want to know that the kids are all right. And there's reason to be concerned. Youth Beyond Blue claims that one in four Australians aged 16 to 24 currently has a mental health condition. And this would mean as many as 750,000 young people. One in six of these young people has anxiety. One in 16 would have depression.
So what stresses and anxieties do young people experience? Are they resilient? And what can we as teachers, parents, aunts and uncles, what can we do to promote their well-being? To talk about these matters and more, I'm pleased to welcome Colette Smart into the studio. She's a psychologist, author, speaker, frequent media commentator, and mum of three, and she also blogs at colettesmart.com. Welcome to the studio, Colette.
Thank you for having me.
There's a lot of talk about well-being now. That's kind of the preferred term. What does it actually mean?
I think well-being to me is human flourishing. It's really just living to the potential that you were created for, not being perfect, not thinking everything in life is going to be perfect and everything's going to make you happy all of the time. But well-being is just being comfortable in your own skin, comfortable with your surroundings, and being able to move through difficulties and times of hardship or pain, which is essentially what positive psychology is all about. Positive psychology is often erroneously thought of as happyology, and it's not that at all. Positive psychology doesn't mean we are trying to help people be happy all of the time. It's actually trying to help people meet their potential, use the skills and the gifts that they've got to contribute to the world around them, to their peers, to their parents, to their families, and feel like they have a sense of hope. That's what positive psychology really is about.
So if we're thinking specifically about the well-being of young people, is that kind of a distinct concern here?
Yes, I'm glad Justine spoke about the Youth Beyond Blue, the statistics, because I actually brought that with me to talk about. And that really is our role as adolescent psychologists, really focusing on that percentage of young people who are struggling, helping the young people who aren't struggling as much to keep doing what they're doing, because whatever they're doing well, but helping the young people who are going through hardships, whether it's parent separation, whether it's issues at school, they may have lost a loved one. We are seeing more and more refugee families in our country now, and so helping them process the trauma that they may have gone through, anything like that, we are really concerned about helping and pouring ourselves into the lives of these young people and helping them to find what is their point of flourishing. Where can they contribute well and feel like they have meaning in their lives?
We're at the time of year where the HSC is happening. A lot of students are knuckling down to face their final exams. We know that exams and coping with school can often be a trigger point for young people experiencing stress and anxiety. Does that sort of feature largely in your practice?
Absolutely. I see this every year with teens who are particularly high achievers. They really struggle when it comes to exam time. And then your teens who are really struggling academically, exam time is also a stressful time for them. But I think around the HSC, we have to help our teenagers look beyond the HSC. I know as parents, we want to help our teens to do the best that they can. And so sometimes we say, if you don't study, you won't go anywhere in life. But that is actually not helpful. Some teens do need a bit more of a push, and they will need their parents to help them with boundaries and structure and to structure their lives. Sometimes for a period of time, they may need to have less time on social media or gaming, but they still need to be out being active. If your child is not sporty, walking the dog is still active. So being out, getting their endorphins, getting the oxygen flowing, but really giving teens hope for the future. They need to know that there is something hopeful after the HSC. The HSC is not the be-all and end-all. And if you don't make your ATAR or whatever you had hoped, actually there are other pathways. And so allowing them to know that this is not the end of the line. And it's that when teenagers often feel like this is it or nothing, that they've become very dejected and very depressed around that time.
The Mission Australia 2014 annual youth survey, this is a thing they do every year, they've nominated four top concerns for young people. So the first is coping with stress in school and study. The second was body image. The third, depression. And the fourth was family conflict. Do those concerns sound quite familiar to you?
Yes, I've followed Mission Australia's surveys for a number of years now, and body image seems to come up every year among the top three. It's almost not rocket science, but I'm glad we have something to prove that this is actually a concern. And it's something we're starting to see schools focus more and more on media literacy, helping young people to focus on the messages that they're being sent and, you know, read them for the lie that they often are. It's not something new, though. I think as adults, we remember that we struggled with body image. There was potentially no such thing as a Mission Australia survey years ago. So it's just helping our young people, actually giving young people stories about how you coped as a parent or as a mentor. I'm a big believer in mentors for young people. And this is where churches do a fantastic role in this, because they have youth groups. We know that the Oxford Handbook of Religion and Health found that there's a positive relationship between religion and mental health. And so I'm not surprised, because young people who are involved in their churches and their youth groups have these natural mentors, other young people who they can walk alongside, they can support. Churches and youth groups are often involved in community service days. And so it gets their focus off of themselves. And so this mentorship, watching older youth leaders do things and do things well and having come through school okay, and then having these mentors tell them about their struggles when they were young. Having mentors and adults tell young people, you know, I struggled with that when I was young. I struggled with body image, or I also worried about my future, normalizes for young people that actually, I'm not abnormal having a worry. In fact, around teenage years is a big time when our young people suddenly realize that their parents aren't superpowers. They aren't these superhuman beings. Little children still think their parents can solve everything. You know, they can create world peace at the bat of an eyelid. But suddenly teenagers are more exposed to the news or exposed to pain, and they see it for what it is, and they realize their parents can't wave a magic wand. And so that starts a time for teens when fears become more prevalent, because they begin to worry about the economy, which is what we've seen in the Mission Australia survey. They begin to worry about their future because they realize, well, mom and dad aren't going to provide for me forever. What if I can't provide for myself? My own children have had these questions. So it's just reassuring them, we will be there to support you, not give everything on a plate, but if we support you and allow you to face natural consequences for your choices. We don't rescue you from everything. I think that's important. Rescuing teens from everything, never giving them jobs around the house and letting them just play games all day is not going to help them wake up as a 40-year-old man one day and just be the perfect 40-year-old man. If we don't help our young people to instill these values in their teens, they will struggle later in life.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Our guest is author and psychologist Colette Smart. Colette, have you read the book Generation Me by Jean Twenge?
I haven't.
Okay, doesn't matter.
Okay.
She says that, you know, we live in a world that's full of individual freedom and opportunity, and this is wonderful because for people it's like the sky's wide open, you can do whatever you like. But she also says that this tremendous possibility comes at a cost, that there is therefore an enormous pressure on us to stand alone. This is actually, she says, the downside of the focus on the self. When we're fiercely independent and self-reliant, we actually, our disappointments are all the more greater because we've got nothing to fall back on. So there's a sense here that, you know, it's up to the individual to make or break their life. It's all on them. Could that be a huge factor in the ways that teens and young people experience anxiety and depression these days, because they're not as buffered in the way that perhaps former generations were?
I think with the globalization of family and people moving all around the world, we're seeing families break up and not having grandparents or aunts or cousins around young people as much. I've actually just come back from Africa recently, where I spoke on youth mental health. And it's so interesting because African and Asian cultures in particular are what we call collectivistic cultures. And I even teach this to my uni students. Western cultures are more individualistic. And now there's pros and cons to both. But the issue with our individualistic culture is that everything is me-centered. Everything's about my pleasure and my right and what I can gain out of a relationship or a job. And that becomes very lonely. It sounds very empowering to say, you know, everything must be good for you, but it actually becomes lonely. You become isolated. If you have nothing else to measure yourself on, you start to see yourself as a failure all the time. In collectivistic cultures, my African students, actually at the uni that I work at, I was asking them about what does your culture regard as riches? And a lot of the Australian, American students in my class said, well, having a big house and a big car or lots of food and being able to go to the beach and all sorts of things with your family when you're older. And my African students, who are migrants from Ghana and all over Africa, were saying, in our culture, it's family. Riches is family. And it was so interesting hearing them debating with one another. Now, coming from Africa, it was interesting asking my delegates about mental health, and they were saying some of the issues with a collectivistic culture is you don't talk about your mental health issues because it brings shame on the family. So that's one of the issues with collectivistic cultures. But so we can learn from each other, I think. I think our teens need to be looking outward more, thinking about what they're doing and how it can contribute to the world around them, to those around them.
The New South Wales Department of Education has recently been encouraging schools to be thinking holistically about student wellbeing, and that means including spiritual wellbeing as part of that, this idea of meaning and purpose. Do you have a sense then that religion has a role to play in giving young people a buffer?
That's such an interesting comment that you've just made, because we're starting to see a push to get religion out of schools, yet on the other hand, they're saying they need spirituality. And what is that if we don't have a particular worldview on which to base our sense of reaching outward or our sense of spirituality? And so it's important to ask our young people then, you know, what are the big questions in life? Why were you created? Do you think you were created for a purpose? What is your meaning in life? What is your purpose in life? And I think those questions are very important, and they are a buffer, but it depends on the worldview that you come from, really.
Colette, you've drawn our attention to the idea of worldview and how that will shape the way that you understand all those big questions, meaning and purpose, etc. What does the Christian worldview have to offer on this account? And why should we be less maybe hesitant about seeking to see it excised entirely from schools?
Well, I think the Christian worldview is very other-focused, which sometimes is not seen as what you should be, but we've just spoken about how the problem is when you become very inward focused and individually focused and I focused, that creates all sorts of other mental health issues. A Christian worldview sees the worth of the human being. They see that every human being has dignity, and so every human being must have a purpose then. And I think that is really attractive about the Christian worldview, that we have something to offer this world. And I love N.T. Wright. So he says something like, in a sense, when you become a Christian, you become your genuine self. So it's almost everything you were created to be, you begin to become, because you suddenly discover your purpose. And so if you're a good sportsman or a good teacher or a good student, go and be the best student that you can be, because at that point, that is part of your purpose and part of giving. Use the gifts that you've been given to give out and make the world a better place. And then once we take our eyes off ourselves, magically, we actually find our self-worth and our mental health improving. But it's something natural that happens. The minute we are less self-focused and less self-absorbed, we actually tend to feel better about ourselves and our mental well-being improves.
It's strange, isn't it, this idea that you might have to lose yourself in order to find yourself.
Absolutely.
In that sense. Yeah. Thank you so much for your wisdom on this, Colette. Colette Smart also blogs at colettesmart.com if you want to check up on her material. Thank you, Colette.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. Thanks for your company. See you next time.